What is going on, everyone? It's Kyle Cruz, and you are listening to the KC at the Movies podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Give me your time. How are you doing? That was completely rhetorical. Like, I don't hear a word you're saying. If you're asking me that I'm going good, I'm going good. I'm pretty good. Just got over a weird chest tightness thing, but I'm still loving kicking. And I want to just reassure you as well, before we get into things, that this will not be about an awards show. I know the last two podcasts has been about an award show. I can reassure you right now, this will not be about an award show. But to give you the bad news as well, this will also not be about The Killer. Now, to give you the bit of the rundown on that, I did try it. I actually recorded about an hour and a half of The Killer podcast, since that I knew that podcast was going to be a long one because it's required a lot of analysis of The Killer. And notes were written, like I said, and I decided to record it, and I just sounded, I stopped it at a certain section because that's when the chest tightness started to play into everything, and I just had to stop. And then I listened to it back the next day and just hated it. I absolutely fucking hated it, to tell you the truth. And I just realized that this is not for me. This is not something that I like doing or I'm comfortable doing. So I didn't think it was fit to be released, and I absolutely hated it, to tell you the truth. I just realized I'm not like a person that analyzes film. I'm just a person that loves movies, loves talking about movies and making movies myself. So that is what I'll continue to do. I'll continue to talk candidly just about movies and what I think about them. And that is what I'm going to be doing today, just not about The Killer. So yeah, I'm sorry to those people that wanted to hear an analysis of The Killer, or my thoughts, if you even wanted to hear my thoughts on The Killer. Sorry for that. But yeah, that will just, that will not be happening. But I do have some movies to talk about on this podcast, and I've got some shows to talk about as well. Just to give you the rundown of the pod, we've got Dune 2 is on the schedule today. Dune Part 2. I went and saw Dune Part 2 on Thursday night. I'm going to give you my thoughts on that. Non-spoiler, of course. I'm going to talk about True Detective Night Country, because I finished that. And we've also got a bunch of anime that I've seen that I want to talk about and that I'm happy to talk about as well, and give you some recommendations there. I've also got some pretty key announcements that I need to make down the line back towards the end of the podcast and, towards the end of the podcast, about the YouTube channel, short films, and something about my website as well that's pretty important that I need to talk to you guys about. And that's about it. And then we're going to get the fuck out of here and I'm going to go to bed. But let's talk about the big thing. But before we do that, I want to talk about my IMAX experience that I had with Dune. Now, I was actually going to make a video on my YouTube channel because the IMAX theater in Sydney reopened, and I was actually going to make a YouTube channel video about my experience back in the theater, back in an IMAX theater, my experience watching IMAX for the first time, because I'd never been to an IMAX theater. I'd never seen a film in IMAX. And I went during the Nolanathon they had at the IMAX theater in Sydney, and I watched Interstellar, and it was incredible, life-changing, all the words. It was amazing. I absolutely loved it. When they announced that Dune was getting reissued as part one, and then they said that it was going to play in IMAX as well, I went and checked it out in IMAX. And here's my fucking thoughts on that. And if you can tell about the giddiness behind my voice here, it was incredible. It was absolutely astonishing. There is no way that I can watch Dune again, not in IMAX, because I know that Dune Part 1 was not entirely filmed in IMAX, whereas Dune Part 2, I think, is mostly or entirely filmed in IMAX. But there are some sequences in Dune Part 1 that were in IMAX and looked absolutely incredible on an IMAX screen. But not only the actual visuals, not only the visuals look incredible, but it's the sound as well. The sound design, just fucking great. And Hans Zimmer's score, just booming through those speakers as loud as you can possibly hear it. It was absolutely beautiful experience. Now, I went on my own. I had no one to kind of react to or fucking freak out about too. But I went on my own. But there's one thing that I did experience in that screening was people were still on their phones. And I thought we were kind of past that. Now, granted, I don't go to a lot of these 6 p.m. showings or 7:30 showings. I like to go to kind of quieter showings. If it's a comedy movie, I'll go to like a bigger one, I think, if it's a comedy movie. But I tend to go to like earlier day things as well, wherever really what my work schedule allows now, since I do have a different job and it's more so during the day. And sometimes there are breaks during the day where I'll go and see a film or I'll you know, do something else to pass the time. But most of the time it is going to the theater to see a film. And I usually would pick those times now instead of those late night sessions or those prime time sessions, like we're talking the 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. sessions, like around that time frame. And I went to, this is a 2:30 session, I think, for Dune IMAX. And there was a lot of people there. It was nearly sold out. And I couldn't believe my fucking eyes when I saw two people on their phones. Two people. There's one guy in the front row in front of me who was text messaging his mate. The film has opened. The film has started. The trailers have finished. The film has started. The IMAX experience has started. And this man is on his phone and talking to someone. Now, granted, he stopped after like 10 minutes. But this person on my far left was just ridiculous. This lasted. The one on my far left not only had a phone out, but her screen was as bright as all fucking hell. And it was really like incredibly distracting during the whole, I'd say the first half of Dune, she had that phone out. Absolutely like insane. It was like a whole hour of her just got this phone out. I don't know what the fuck she was doing. I didn't care what she was doing. But there was going to be a point where I was going to fucking turn to her and say, can you fucking turn your phone off? We're sitting in an IMAX theater. We're sitting in an IMAX theater. Do you, like, not understand what's going on? Like, and do you have the fucking etiquette to be respectful to everyone around you trying to watch the fucking movie? I don't excuse it in a normal theater as well, but I could not believe that the people had their phones out in fucking IMAX. I don't understand that. Why are you here to see the film then? Why are you here to take the spot of someone that might have wanted to see the film? Now, this could be wrong, but you've taken the spot of someone in a good fucking spot too, in a good row where I sat. You've taken that spot to not only not engage with the film and, you know, just be so engulfed by it and enjoy your experience, but you sit there and you look at your phone. And Dune is like this IMAX fucking Dune experience is a secondary thing to you. I'm sorry, but I wholeheartedly disagree with that. And I, call me Martin Scorsese over here, but this is, you're missing out. You are missing out on something truly beautiful here with Dune and IMAX. And I just couldn't believe it. I honestly just couldn't believe that these two people had their phones out and would just be fucking surfing on their phones. I could not fathom it. So luckily she puts her phone away after like half an hour of the, After an hour of the film, if you've seen Dune, she puts her phone down after the, I don't want to spoil Dune, after the fucking big thing happens. And, you know, they have to go to, meet the Fremen. That's when she puts her phone away. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that's like halfway through the film, right? That's like second act shit. I was astounded. Absolutely astounded. Bar that, put that aside. It was amazing. Dune and IMAX is incredible. If you ever get the chance to see Dune and IMAX, it's incredible. I would have loved to go to the double feature they were doing with Dune Part 1 and then Part 2 straight after. It would be an undertaking for sure, since Dune Part 2, I think, is a slightly longer film than Part 1, sitting at 2 hours and 46 minutes. But I'd fucking still do it. If these people are doing Twilight marathons or Harry Potter marathons at the Ritz, then I'd fucking do an IMAX marathon at the IMAX theater for sure. Now, granted, they get breaks, but I think having like a, you know, I'm sure they would have like a 15-minute intermission between each parts of Dune. So I can do that for sure. And then the film is so good that you would love to be there for it, and you would love to watch it with the other part, because pretty much part two picks up right after part one. Speaking of part two, let's talk about it. I saw it on Thursday night, opening night, and it was awesome. to give you my full thoughts, I was very, very excited for Dune Part 2. We're supposed to get this in, I think it was November last year or September last year. I think it was November we're supposed to get this, because this was going to qualify for this year's Academy Awards, where it's going to qualify for the 2025 Academy Awards, aka the 97th Academy Awards. I could be wrong. It could be the 98th. But I think I'm in that ballpark there. But because the strikes happened, this was pushed to, I think it was pushed to March, and then it was brought back to February 29th. Now, people over in America, they saw it first, critics got to see it first, and then they had this fan screening, I think about 3 days before the actual film was released worldwide. And I was lucky enough to have some time off on the Thursday, and went and saw it on Thursday, one of my best mates. And it was just, in a word, breathtaking. It really is breathtaking. Now, if you haven't seen part one, it's called Dune Part Two. So you definitely need to see part one before you watch part two. that's just a little bit of a little tip there, little pointer that you definitely need to watch part one before part two, because this takes place literally right after the end of part one. There's no like time skips. There's no like montages or flashbacks or anything like, or flash forwards or anything like that. This takes place literally minutes after part one finishes, where they leave on the thing. You know, I'm not going to spoil it, but it takes place, I would say minutes or an hour after that event that happens at the end of part one. It takes place immediately after that, and then you're told the rest of the story. And that's what you need to know before you go into part two. That you definitely need to see part one, because without part one, there is no context for what happens in part two. You are not going to understand a fucking goddamn thing. I think the only thing that you would understand is the relationship between Chani and Paul, because Chani didn't have much to really do in part one, Zendaya's character. But everything else, all the stuff to do with Paul, all the stuff to do with Jessica, all the stuff to do with the Fremen, the Harkonnens, you definitely need to watch part one before you go into part two. You cannot go into part two without having the context of part one. So, because I know there's people out there that are going to see part two without seeing part one. Y'all are crazy. You know what, kid. So what did I think about the film? This is without a doubt the most care and effort I've ever seen being put into a major blockbuster film. What Denis Villeneuve has pulled off here is truly, truly astounding. It's not this CGI fucking mishmash, shit everywhere on the screen, blah, 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 big action blockbusters that we see like in Marvel, DC films. That new Godzilla vs. Kong movie, that looks like it has a lot of that in it as well. This, the way everything is pulled off here and the way everything is executed is just, bar none, some of the best shit I've ever seen put to screen. And I am not kidding. And I know that sounds like a lot of hyperbole, but I'm not fucking kidding when I say that. Everything in this movie just feels so tangible. Like, you can feel the sand of Arrakis. Like, we're sitting there, we're watching this opening scene, and it's so quiet. We're sitting there, and the characters are moving through, like, the sand and everything, the Fremen. And just like the sand falling off their boots as they walk around, the sand falling through their fingertips, sand falling off clothes and stuff like that, the physical and the particle effects and everything. It's all just top notch, absolutely top fucking notch shit. It's You can feel it. Like, I'm not even kidding. You can feel that sand of Arrakis. You can feel how sparse and dry this planet is. They absolutely nailed this idea of this huge desert planet. It's nailed. Absolutely beautiful. The texture of it all is just so mind-bogglingly real. But it's all fiction. You know, it's all fake. This is all, like, you know, movie magic, as they would call it. And I was just absolutely transported watching this film. Absolutely transported. The sequences put to film are so moving and enthralling that you can't help but be completely, when I say, like, mind-bogglingly real, I'm meaning that, like, you just can't help but be so swept up in this pure fantasy of it all. It's been a while since, I mean, I've really, it's been since 2021, Dune, that I've wanted to be part of this world, be part of, like, this fantasy world and learn everything about it and eat it all up again, you know? Relive it. Because, like, good fantasy will make you want to relive the movie all over again. And great fantasy will want you to stay. But this is just on another level. Like, just like the first one, I want to know more. I want to know every single piece of information possible. And you just want to be absolutely... I'm trying to think of, like, the most poetic word you can think of, because that's what this fucking movie deserves. Is, like, this, you just want to be swallowed by it all, you know? And, you know, little, not too poetic, but, you know, it's a little fucking heavy-handed there, Kyle, but, like I said, sounds hyperbolic, but you really fucking do, man. Like, you really want to just be fully, this is like, it's like the epitome of immersion, is what this fantasy is. And, oh, man, it's just unbelievable. Once again, the sound design is absolutely terrific. All the sounds from all the action, all the guns, the ornithopters, just fucking everything, man. Everything is just beautiful. It's beautiful. And it sounds incredible in Dolby Atmos. So, dude, if you're going to watch this movie, please do check it out in Dolby Atmos. It deserves it. It really deserves it. That $30 fee or the $26 or $28 fee, it really fucking deserves it. This movie deserves that price tag. And I'm seeing this again with paying that price tag. So it really deserves it. But I think the next time I see this, we'll probably be in IMAX. But I couldn't get in for another few weeks, because every fucking showing's booked out. Every showing's booked out, so I can't get in. But, you know, we'll get in there eventually. Greg Fraser's cinematography, once again, absolutely fucking blew me away. I love how he shoots everybody. Oh my God. How does this man do it? I love how he shoots these characters, man. The photography is just absolutely beautiful. It's just stunning. It is stunning work. And I see this getting nominated once again for cinematography. And Greg Fraser, man, he's on another fucking level. He is on something. Between this, Dune Part 1, The Batman. This man is on fire with this visual feast that he continues to bring the audience. And that, look, that's helped because of Denis Villeneuve as well. But, man, Greg Fraser, he is honestly, I think, one of the best cinematographers working today. And I think this is some of his best imagery he's brought to us yet. The effects as well, seamless, absolutely seamless. I love the explosions. I don't know why, but I really love the explosions in this movie. They're very, like, flower-like. Like, they have that kind of nuclear blast kind of cloud flower thing going on. And they're kind of soft. They're not, like, rough. They're not like fire coming out of them. The way they're shot, I don't know if they use miniatures. I'm assuming they use miniatures for some of these harvesting spice machines. But the way they are shot and the way the sound design is used when these things are, like, blown up or there's any type of action or explosions, it's like quiet. It's loud, but it's also quiet as well. And it really sells the sense of scale and everything around it, like just how huge everything is in this movie, how massive everything is. And I really, really liked that about the special effects and the sound design, like I said before. And the performances, once again, are amazing. Zendaya gets a lot more to do in this film as Chani. A lot more to do. She has a lot more character development. Rebecca Ferguson as Lady Jessica. She gets another big role in this film that is really intriguing and really interesting. And once again, I want to know more about the Bene Gesserit, man. Like, again, I want to know more about the Bene Gesserit because they are back in this movie as well, along with Lea Seydoux's character. I think Lady Margot, her name was in the film. Working together with Princess Aurelian, who's Florence Pugh. And once again, I come away from this movie wanting to know more about the Bene Gesserit and wanting to find out more about them. And because just something about them is just so intriguing. It's like they're behind, it's like they're the puppet masters, man. They're like the puppet masters behind everything. And that's not spoiling anything, by the way. That's just how they act throughout the film, like throughout these, both of these movies really as well. Yeah, just a really intriguing bunch. And I want to know more about them. Javier Bardem as Stilgar gets a lot more to do. He was really good. Dave Bautista was also really good as Yabron, I think his name was. Stellan Skarsgård doesn't get a lot more to do in this one. He had a lot more to do in part one, but he does get some really cool scenes in part two. There's a really great scene of him at a gladiatorial event that I really liked. And Austin Butler. Finally, Austin Butler. This is the one everyone's been talking about. This is the performance everyone's been talking about, and it's well-deserved. Because Austin Butler, I've been kind of hit and miss with. I liked him Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. That was the first time I'd seen him as well. And a bunch of other films he's been in, I've liked as well. I thought his Elvis was fine. I wasn't really blown away by his Elvis. So I didn't really think it was amazing, but I thought it was fine. But this man as Fade Rafa, aka the I think it's the Nar Baron. It's the follow up to, I can't really think of the word right now, but it's the guy that's going to take the Baron's place. But he is the Baron's nephew. He is the Baron's nephew, and this man is psychotic. This character is insane. He is scary in this movie, Austin Butler, and I love the way that, just like he did in the Elvis movie, and I didn't love that, but he's really good with manipulating his voice. And at first, it really caught me off guard with the way he was talking in the film. And he was really sounding like the Baron, like Stellan Skarsgård. But then it sounded really, I don't know, like Fade Ralph is trying to do the impression of the Baron because he wants to be more imposing. And that's what it sounded like at first. But then as the movie went on and as his character developed even more, he really fell into that voice. And it didn't really bother me after a while. And look, it didn't bother me at first. I was just a little bit iffy on it. I was a bit like, oh, okay, he sounded a bit funny, but you know, I'll keep listening. And he really, really got into that role. And, as he fell into it a bit more, I started to get a lot more enveloped in his character. And Fade Rafa was definitely one of my favorite parts of the film. His sequences on Caladan are fucking beautiful. I love the way Caladan is shot. Caladan. What the fuck am I saying? Is it Prime 9? What's the Harkonnen planet? Yeah, I've got to look at the fucking Harkonnen planet. Gedi Prime. The way that Gedi Prime is shot is gorgeous. Because I was like watching on the trailers, I was thinking like, oh, they're doing black and white sequences. These must be flashbacks or whatever. No, but that's the way the fucking planet is filmed. That is the way they fucking photograph Gedi Prime. It's fucking beautiful. I mean, it's not just black and white. It's a negative effect going on. Love the way it was filmed on the outside where it's all got that negative effect. And as you go inside, when they're actually inside the actual, in the interiors, how, you know, their skin color comes back. You know, Fade Ralph actually has fair skin. Like at first I was like, dude's got white skin? Because the Baron had, you know, kind of white skin, but still had, you know, fair skin. But then we actually go into the interiors. Yeah, you can actually see that they it's just a, you know, trick of the light. It's the outside. Yeah, really cool. I really liked the sequences on Gedi Prime. It was really cool. And there's other things I want to talk about there as well, but those are spoilers. Maybe I'll talk about those later on. But yeah, Austin Butler, he killed it. He absolutely killed it. It was one of my favorite parts of the movie. But I also want to talk about Timothée Chalamet, because I liked him in Dune. I liked him as a Paul Atreides. I thought he was a better one than Kyle MacLachlan was. But in this one, he's done something like I hadn't seen this man do before. He was actually was threatening. Like when that certain event happens in this film and his character goes for a change, what Timothée Chalamet brings out of himself is really like, it's really strong, very powerful. He has this great speech when he's talking to the Fremen somewhere in the film. And I thought it was a great, great scene. I thought Timothy did fantastic in that scene. And it was some of the best acting I've ever seen from him. So, yeah, I loved Timothy in this movie. He was really good. Like I said, so was Zendaya. I thought they were great. I thought they had great chemistry. Rebecca Ferguson as well killed it. And then the newcomers, like I said, Austin Butler, they killed it. Leia Seydoux. And we know they're going to have more to do because Denny wants to do a third one. But just like with the first one, the person I'm most impressed with, and I've mentioned this mirror right at the top, I've been talking about him all the time. The person I'm most impressed with is Denis Villeneuve. He has just made something that people would thought was unadaptable. People of the books, people that knew the books, they didn't think you could adapt this film. Lynch tried it in the 80s. He tried it. People like that. It's a cult classic. It's a bit of a cult hit with some people. I didn't. I think it really doesn't work as a film. But to split this film up, to split the book up into two parts. Now, granted, I haven't read the book, but to split the two things up into two parts, people agree that that was the right thing to do. And because it gives everything else to breathe. Now, you've still got to make some liberties. You've still got to make some sacrifices because you're not going to fit every single piece of information into the film. When you're trying to adapt something, there's got to be some things. You've got to make some hard decisions. And he's talked about that in some interviews. Make some hard decisions to cut certain things. And there's even one thing that my friend who's actually read the book, she said that they actually cut something out from the book that was actually quite important to the Fremen people. That was not actually in the film. And it wasn't actually in the first one. However, it was explained in this one a bit more. So, you know, when you're adapting something, I understand there's some things that you need to do, and there are some decisions there are some hard decisions that you need to make when you're trying to adapt something and to get something down to, you know, 2 hours and 46 minutes. And he's managed to do that in two parts. And, you know, I thought it was good as a film, as a standalone film. I thought he did an absolutely fantastic job. What he's assembled here with this move, with Dune Part 1, but more so with Dune Part 2, is the reason that we go see blockbusters on the big screen. It looks fucking inconceivable. You're sitting there in the cinema, you're looking at the screen, you're looking at the images projected on the screen, and you're thinking, this can't be fucking real. But it is. It was actually done. It was actually made. This man pulled it off with everyone, with every talented person involved. He pulled it off and he actually fucking did it. And it's an absolutely monumental achievement in epic blockbuster filmmaking. Because if he gets to make Messiah, we are looking at another Star Wars. We are looking at another Lord of the Rings. I think we are looking at the next thing. At the next gigantic trilogy that people have movie nights for, people dress up for, people have special events and, you know, celebrate, man, celebrate this trilogy. Because, man, you know, I go to the movies, I go to pastime, but most of the time, the reason I go to see a film, the reason why I want to make movies is I want to escape. I want to just escape for 2 hours at least. And for 2 hours and 46 minutes on Thursday night, I forgot everything else existed and I never wanted to leave. So if you can tell by my reaction, I really enjoyed Dune Part 2. I haven't read the book, so I didn't have a huge, a strong reaction. I know I came out of it a bit weird. My friend can kind of attest to that I came out of it a bit weird, but, she had read the books and she said it was a really, really enjoyable movie. And they did a great job of adapting. So, because I think I'm going to do a rewatch. I don't think I definitely won't get the book done before I go watch an IMAX. But when I do eventually watch it again after the IMAX screening, I would hopefully would have read the book and would have explained everything. So, yeah, those are my thoughts on Dune Part 2. I really, really enjoyed it. I'm really cannot wait to go see it again in IMAX and be transported once again and let the man take me. Just take me away. please go watch Dune Part 2. Go watch on the biggest screen you can. Go find the loudest speakers you can. And just escape for 2 hours and 46 minutes. Just fucking escape. And I guarantee you're going to have a great time. So that's a big recommendation for Dune Part 2. It's now playing fucking everywhere. And you can go watch it. Please go watch it. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about on this podcast was True Detective, Night Country. I believe I mentioned it on the Golden Globes podcast, I think, a couple of podcasts ago. It was an episode or two ago. I started watching True Detective Night Country, and I think it was not this week, but the last week it finished, and we got about 6 episodes, I believe, which is, I think, shorter than most seasons, because I think every season's been 8, I think, but this was 6 episodes. It wasn't called Season 4, it was given a subtitle, Night Country, so it's a completely different thing. However, I think it's got a bit of an identity crisis, because there are certain things it wants to do, and there are certain things it also wants to do, and it all does not work. And if that's going to give you a bit of a hint of what I thought about Night Country, well, there you go. I thought this was a mess. It was so weird. I was liking certain things, then something would happen, and then I get pissed off about it, and then something else would happen, and then the end was just a fucking hodgepodge, and I was just like, what is going on? Not in a good way as well. I was just like, what is going on? Where are we? Okay, do they think they're answering the questions now? And then certain events transpired, and then it ended. And that kind of just shrugged my shoulders, and I was like, well, okay, that was 6 hours of my time. Every consecutive Monday for the last 6 weeks. Yeah, I don't want to get into the spoilers, but I liked some of the characters. I think I ended up liking Evangeline, played by Carly Ruiz, I think. I liked Evangeline the most, but the problem with the show for me is I didn't really like any of the characters. I didn't like, I've already forgotten her name. Joy? Beth? Liz, that's it. I didn't like Liz. I didn't like John Hawks' character. I didn't like her fucking partner. I didn't like Evangeline's sister. I didn't like all those other side characters. I think I did like Rose. She was cool. I like Rose. But they all just weren't like likable. And that's the thing. You don't like write likable characters. But there needs to be ways that you can understand why they're in that way. And I feel like they're trying to do that with Liz, but we don't get answers until the last episode. And even those answers just felt like they pulled them out of their fucking ass. Like, not to dunk too much on Issa Lopez, but I just felt that, like, things were just... So, okay, this is how this happened, this is how this happened, and this is how this happened. And it just doesn't all work, man. It doesn't work. And it all comes off really rushed. It all comes off, like I said, just a mess. That is the best way I can describe this whole season of True Detective. It was an absolute fucking mess of a season. And I liked it better than season 2. I think season 3 is a bit better than this one. But yeah, it's just fallen down the wayside, I think. And they've been renewed for another one. Issa Lopez is doing it again. I would like a different creator. I think we've had a different creator almost for every season. Pizzolatto has been reduced to an executive producer for this season. Like, he didn't write or anything like that. But I also did like the different people they had on for every season. But you're not going to beat the first season, man. I don't know what you're trying to do. And this is what Night Country tried to do. They tried to have elements that came from that first season, came from the cults in the first season. And it just didn't work. I was just like, what are you trying to be? Are you trying to be Night Country, or are you trying to connect yourself to the first season with all the people in Louisiana and that cult in Louisiana? What are you trying to do? You don't know what you are, so why do I have to pay attention to you? And that's just how I felt throughout most of the season, really. And then the last episode ended, and then I just shrugged my shoulders and I turned the TV off. And, man, it was, I wasn't having a good time of it so much is that I went back and watched the first season again, the entire thing, before I tuned into the next three parts of the, I think I missed like three episodes and ended up watching them in one night. But before that, I rewatched the entire first season again and, absolutely loved it all over. And then just like saw just like the, not, I'm not trying to compare, but really like, you know, you're still part of True Detective. Like you've still got the name True Detective. And you want to connect yourself to the first season with all these like symbols and everything like that. But it's different here because it's Night Country. Just call yourself season four. I don't know. It just didn't work. It didn't work for me. And I just thought that the creators of the show were trying to have their cake and eat it too. And it just doesn't come off that well. It came off as sloppy writing, sloppy storytelling. And it just kind of ended. And that was it. So yeah, I did not like Night Country. It's a shame because I love everything True Detective. I tune in every time True Detective airs, and it's one of my, you know, it is. And that first season is like one of the best seasons of television ever created. And I will continue to tune in. I will continue to tune into True Detective, but I just won't have my hopes up anymore. If they're going to, you're not going to live up to that first season. I just don't think and I'm not expecting you to do it. I'm not expecting to do it, but. Oh man, it was just really poor and was not a fan of it. So yeah, not a recommendation from me for True Detective Night Country. I didn't really take to it. If you did take to it, that's cool. That's fine. I'm glad you had fun and I'm glad you got a good experience out of it. But I didn't like it too much. So yeah, like I said, I'll be tuning into the next one, but I won't be really getting too excited about it this time. And now, I introduced this one in the Golden Globes podcast, but the first podcast that I recorded this year. I'm going to do a new segment where I just talk about what I've been watching. And last time I talked about, I think, Upon Entry, Eileen, and Scrapper. And this time, I hope you're ready to enter the weeb zone, because I'm going to be talking about some anime that I've been watching. I've been really having a bit of an anime craze, and I've ingested shows. I have gone through the harems. I have gone through the fucking bleeding out of the noses. I have gone through the questionable gaps between characters' relationships. You know, I've gone through the crazy animation. You know, I've gone through it all. And I want to keep going through it. And I watched about two shows, not last weekend, I think the weekend before. And I started a new show that I'm watching about every 2 weeks. I'm watching this one. And then I've got another show that I've just been watching and I can't stop watching it. Please, goddamn, help me. I can't stop watching this goddamn show. but I want to start with Oshinoko. I started Oshinoko. Now, this was a huge hit from last year. It aired from April 12th to June 28th last year. It was a big hit. That opening song, Idol, from Asabi. I think it's Asabi. Is Asabi the creator? You know, big hit. Everyone loved it. Went famous. I had no idea about it until I started watching it. A few weeks ago, I had no idea about it until I started watching it a few weeks ago. So I finally checked it out. And the first episode is about 80 minutes long, so it's about feature film length. And that was what really caught me about the first episode is that it is feature film length, and I was like, okay. Why does the first episode need to be 80 minutes? And then I saw why it needs to be 80 minutes. Because there is so much establishing that needs to be done in the first episode. And I think it does a really good job of establishing all the main characters, setting up the premise, and setting up the story for the coming season. And I thought it was one of the best pilots I've ever seen, not just in anime, ever seen. I absolutely was enthralled by it. I was so enthralled by it. Let me just give you the rundown of how enthralled I was by this pilot. The night before, I went to see Queens of the Stone Age in Sydney. I didn't get home to Newcastle till about 4:30 in the morning. And then I had to see, I watched Oshinoko at 10. I didn't sleep. No, I did sleep. I did sleep. I only got about 1 to 2 hours of sleep because I've been having some shit sleep recently. So I did that and I was like, all right, Oshinoko, let's watch it. Let's do it. It was so good. I hadn't had my coffee yet as well. It was so good that it was so good that it kept me awake for an entire 80 minutes. It kept me awake. So I think it's the biggest praise I can give this first episode of Oshinoko is that it kept me awake. It was that good. It kept me awake. So, yeah. And then the next three, I think I'm at episode 5. Everything after that is still really engaging. And I really like what they're doing with the show because what it's about is it's pretty much looking at, and because I don't want to spoil the first episode at all, it's looking at the different aspects of the Japanese entertainment industry. And I love the way it's exploring each aspect of the entertainment industry in Japan. You start with idols, you start looking at directing, you start looking at acting, the post-production parts and everything like that. It's all explored really quite well. And I am loving the storytelling. Just from a storytelling perspective, the animation is really beautiful too. I love the way the eyes look. But the storytelling in this is the thing that's grabbing me. It's not, when it kept me awake, it wasn't the visuals. It was how engaging the writing and the storytelling was. So I'm actually keen to, I don't know when this show is going to finish, but I'm actually keen to read the manga as well. I don't know if I should watch it as I'm watching the TV show because I don't really like to spoil myself, but maybe after the season finishes. Now, we're supposed to be getting a second season this year, I think. So yeah, that's my recommendation for Oshinoko. It kept me awake. A little boy that was sleep deprived, 2 hours sleep, went to a concert the night before, ears were probably still fucking ringing, that I wanted to sleep, and it kept me awake, kept me engaged. That's Oshinoko. So check it out. Then I checked out Licorice Recoil. This is about... This is about a secret spy organization of girls. They're called Licorices or Licorice. And they take out targets and get things done secretly without the public of Tokyo knowing. Now, your main characters are Chisato and Takana. I couldn't have said that more Aussie. Takana. Fucking Takana, mate. Takana. And Chisato actually runs this cafe called Liko Rico. And she runs it with Mika and Mizuki. But they also work for Licorice. And the story in this is not that... It's all right. It's not the most engaging part. To me, the engaging part is the action. People just describe this as just like girl John Wick. And I really like the relationship between Chisato and Takana because Chisato is like your every kind of like manic pixie dream girl. Everything's fucking fun. Everything's great. La-di-da-di-da. And Takana is like the complete opposite. Logistical, more logical, more kind of realistic way of looking at things. And I really like the way they gel together and their chemistry. I like how Chisato really gels with every one of the other characters as well. But really her relationship with Takana is the cornerstone of the show. And it really works because to have them to be the focus and what really needs to work is that relationship needs to work. And it does. Because to tell you the truth, I do like the action. But it's not really the story that's keeping me in the show. And granted, the story is starting to get a little interesting, especially towards the end of the first season. But... it's the characters that keep me around for this one. I love Chisato. I love Takana. I love Mika. I love Mizuki. I love Kurumi. I love the people running the Liko Rico. I care for them. And that's all. It's simple. And that's all I'm coming back for. So I'm looking forward to the second season of that. If that sounds up your alley, bit of John Wick, bit of fucking slice of life shit, there you go, Licorice Recoil. And that came from 2022, and we should be getting a second season soon, but I don't think this year, but probably soon. But that was one of them. Then I checked out Call of the Night, or Yafukashi no Uta, and this is about a guy. Now, if you don't want to know something about me, I'm a boy of the night. I'm a man of the shadows. I'm a man of the dark. I'm a man of the 2 a.m., the 3 a.m. And that's just the way I've been for most of my adult life. And what this show gets right is it really appreciates that niche audience that loves the night and loves everything that the night has to offer. Because it's about this boy named Ko. And he's starting to have insomnia. He doesn't want to go back to school. So he just stops going to school. It's simple. He just stops fucking going. And then he starts going out at night and exploring. And then one night he comes across a girl named Nazana. And she's a vampire. And then I'm not going to tell you what happens next, because then you get the rest of the show. And it's lovely. And it's beautiful. And it's not the best thing I've seen. But I think it does a great job of exploring that relatability, I think, of the love of the night and the love of all things that come out to love at night. You know, the streets are quiet, things are closed, but also some things are open, and certain characters are around at night. And it's not all bad, you know? And yeah, I just really enjoyed the atmosphere. I love how the streets of Tokyo look in this show. Sometimes they use some purple, sometimes they use some blue, this like aqua green blue. Sometimes they use some yellow as well. It's very artistic, and it's very very unique, and I liked it. I really liked how Tokyo was portrayed in this show. I've never been to Tokyo, but I wish it looked like that. I've seen pictures of Shibuya, and other places in Tokyo, and other places in Japan, but I don't think it looks like that. And I like that kind of the abstract of seeing Tokyo in that way. So yeah, Call of the Night, I really liked that too. That was also from 2022, and I don't think it's going to get another season, because manga readers do not think it's going to get a second season. So because I think it, like, I don't know, turns into different stuff. So because apparently it kind of branches off into different stories, and it might not be doable as a second season. I would be okay with actually just watching kind of that anthology stuff, but also I might just read the manga. I like these characters, so I might just read the manga. And then finally, this is the show I just can't stop watching, and I would recommend, my biggest recommendation here, other than Oshinoko, of course, Kaguya-sama Lovers War. I'm finally on it. I'm late to the train. You know, I'm late to the party. I'm late on the train. Hello, welcome aboard. That's me. I'm on the Kaguya-sama train now. This show is incredible. This show is one of the funniest, one of the most entertaining animes I've ever seen. And it easily is climbing my list of my favorite animes. I've only seen a season and a half, and I absolutely have side-splitting laughs. I'm smiling. I'm crying. It's fucking great, man. It's fucking great. I get it. Kaguya-sama fans, I get it. It's fucking good. It's good shit. I love Kaguya Shinomiya. I love Miyuki Shiragane, but my favorite character, man, Chika Fujiwara. That's my girl right there. Chika Fujiwara is my girl. Fucking love it. Absolutely love these characters. I love how the narrator narrates everything kind of like a sports anime. I love how we get the battle results at the end. And I've been told to check out the English dub as well, because apparently the English dub is really fucking good as well, but it takes things in a different way, and it explores things in a different way as well in terms of the humor. So I'm looking forward to checking out the English dub, as well as checking out the film that supposedly came out last year or in 2021. That supposedly came out last year, I think it was the kiss that never ends or something like that, I think it's called. But yeah, I'm loving the show. I'm there, fan. I can't get summer fans. I'm there with you now. I'm loving this fucking show. It's so good. I look forward to watching it every single day. So, Kaguya-sama Love is War, get your fucking ass on that. That is a good fucking show. All right, finally, I've got some announcements to make, some important announcements to talk about. First, I want to talk about YouTube. Now, I'm in the process at the moment of editing the horror video, because I explained in the last podcast there's going to be a trilogy of videos now on my YouTube channel. It's going to be the horror videos, the horror movies that I watched in 2023, the TV shows I watched in 2023, and then finally will be the top 10 of 2023. Now, I didn't realize, I'm editing this video, right? I didn't realize that I was editing this video on a 1080p monitor. It's 4K video, and I'm editing it on a 1080p monitor. And my dumb ass didn't pick up that I was doing that. So, I either can switch to the laptop, which is, it's kind of just on its way out anyway, or I'm in the process at the moment of getting a 4K monitor, which I'm going to replace this one. I'm going to put the Asus, I've got an Asus one at the moment, I'm going to put that on the side, and that'll be the gaming monitor, and then this 4K monitor will be my editing monitor, and everything I watch, like movies and stuff like that, on. So I'm in the process of getting a 4K monitor at the moment, so there's going to be a little bit more time before I put these trilogy videos out. In the meantime, to make up for that as well, I know I haven't put out any diary videos out, so I'm going to put up an everything I've been watching lately to do with January and February. I'll film that sometime this week, probably on the Thursday, since that's my day off. Now, I said before, I don't get a lot of time with my day job now, so I'd have to use these days. Like, these are crucial to use these fucking days, because when I get out from work, all you want to do is just fucking sit there and watch Kaguya-sama, because shit's stressful, bro. Shit is stressful. So, yeah, that's what's happening with the YouTube videos. They're coming soon, but I just wanted to give you an update on those. Nothing, I'm not dead, you know. I'm not dead, I'm not missing. I'm just biding my time because I want to give you some good videos. I am in the process of bringing out the next short film. I've done a first draft on that and was currently working on and shortlisting the short film at the moment. But like I said, I want to get some better equipment for that. So I won't be probably shooting that now till like April, May. So that's the progress there. The other thing I want to talk about is my website. Now, nothing's going on with it. I'm not happy with it. I haven't been, and granted, I haven't been doing a lot with it. And that's the reason why I'm making this decision. So I think as of next week, I don't know what day, but as of next week, I'm taking the website down. I think I'm going to get rid of it. I'm going to take it down because right now it only serves to be the home of the podcast and the home of just showing Unicorn on the homepage and like my gallery and everything like that. And look, you can go watch Unicorn on Vimeo. So is Longland. Longland's on Vimeo as well. And I can put those photos up on my socials. You know, you can see them there. And the podcast as well. You can listen to that on Spotify. You can listen to that on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or, you know, wherever you get them. So as of next week, I've made the decision to take down the website. It's also going to cost me a lot of money to keep that running as well. And I just don't have that money at the moment just to keep that running. And you keep running something, not just keep running the website, but keep running something I am not using at all. So just want to be frank with you about that one. I'm going to be taking that down next week. Because what I also was going to put on there is a commentary for Unicorn. Now, that is going to be something I'm now going to put on my YouTube channel instead of the website. So if you're interested in watching this kind of visual commentary, if you're interested in kind of watching a visual commentary, not just an audio commentary, but also a visual commentary of Unicorn, that will be going up on YouTube instead. And I'll start working on that soon. I'm really excited about that one because there's a lot of things I want to talk about with the making of that film. And that's it. Those are the announcements. And that's the end of the podcast, guys. Thanks for listening. Check out my socials. They'll be in the show notes down below. Take care. Be safe.